page turners. Welcome to the first episode of our Matt Fraction coverage. Hell yeah. And we're starting off with a book him and Brubaker did together, which is cool because we just were talking about Ed last week. I'm excited to be here with my fellow brothers in comics. I just got back from Walmart, which always puts me in a bad mood. Like, I'm in a great mood, and then I go to Walmart. And my best description of Walmart is, if you guys have seen Ghostbusters 2, right? You know the river of slime that's under the city that's making everybody, like, hateful? I'm in Walmart, and I'm fine at first, but after, like, 20 minutes, it's like that river of slime is, like, making me an asshole. Yeah, it's just... I feel bad because I got kind of frustrated with this lady because, like, they lock up the baby formula. It's a hassle. You have a cart full of shit. My cart was completely full. And she doesn't speak English, really. And that's, I understand. That's fine. I'm glad she's working. But you don't have to take it to one register the baby formula. But she can't really speak English, so they always tell her to take it to one line. And it's always the longest line. So I'm, like, frustrated with it. I'm like, no, you don't have to go there. And then another employee has to always come up and tell her, no, we can go to whatever, you know, register he wants. Just make sure you take the formula to the register. And, like, I just felt bad because I wouldn't have reacted the way I did if I didn't have that, like, river of slime vibe. Like, I just really want to get the fuck out of that store. Like, it's just everyone's in everyone's way. A lot of people are angry. Today there was about 10 people refusing to wear masks and screaming at people. And then I got to see the 100 flyers all over your shopping center, Chaz. I'm sure you've seen them, about the protests going on in front of Planet Hollywood about fighting against the mask mandate, which just put me in a real good we're all going to die vibe, which is how I feel about the environment and the world, and how if we just work together, we could solve everything. But everyone just gets into squabbles over either $50 million or that they have to wear a mask in a pandemic, which is to make sure all of us are safe. It's an easy thing to do and an easy thing to understand to me, but it just fucking...
Oh, yeah. You guys have a suicide cult of anti-maskers in Vegas, and out here, because I haven't been able to see the sun because of all the fucking smoke from climate change. Today I can. Today the winds have changed.
We got a show nice. Yesterday. It was so smoky here. I didn't even go outside, and that was from all those fires. So, yeah,
I feel. That's what you're saying.
Sorry.
I mean, nowhere near as bad as what you showed us, Jack. For sure, wasn't nearly as bad, but it was a bit eerie. It felt like being in a video game where the city loads as you drive through it. So it's like, I'm not close enough to that building yet. Oh, there it is. It just loaded in. It was weird.
It was actually just that the simulation was having some issues, and the
they were installing more RAM.
They had to install more RAM because the LOD was low, you know.
I'm gonna run with that story idea about, like, 13 architects instead of archangels, but they were called archangels, and actually, like, what they were doing is just, like, moderating the simulation in early times, and people just couldn't understand them, so they thought they're angels because they're like, ah, shit, we're fixing this village. And then that's why they, like, burn Sodom and Gomorrah. They're like, we got to get rid of this thing. Let's raise it. Burn it down.
So the angels are essentially the people that started Reddit and then were like, you know what? Let's just hand it off to the people that are already on there to moderate and do they'll figure it out.
Well, we'll come back if shit really gets bad. So I'm, like, waiting for them right now. Like, come on, guys. It's, you know, it's getting there.
Any second now.
When you read the Bible and think about the angels and, like, how they describe them, they're much more, like, terrifying and non-human than they are in, like, the paintings.
Definitely.
And stuff.
One's like and a wheel of eyeballs.
A while ago. Yeah, exactly. I was looking at a picture a while ago that was, like, supposed to be, like, more accurate renditions of the angels, and they all look like these weird fucking alien beings that
definitely aliens,
people who coded our simulation.
Yeah,
definitely.
And Metatron is the wheel of eyeballs one. That's why the as a hippies like me and Jack know, that's why Metatron's cube looks the way it does when it's just geometry. So my coworker at my job, they're not going to try work, he had a fruit of life shirt. And so I, like, ran out to him, and I was like, hell yeah, man, and, like, pulled out my Seed of Life thing under my button shirt and was like, yeah, and he's like, yeah, dude, I just love geometry. It's mostly because of Tool. And then I was just like, oh, this guy doesn't even know about sacred geometry. And then I was just like, Alex Gray is cool too. And he looked at me like, yeah, Alex Gray is pretty cool. And he had literally the Fruit of Life tattooed on his arm. And I was like, maybe he knows it's sacred geometry. Or he just really likes geometry. Or he knows it's sacred geometry and just likes the geometry of it and not the hippie shit connected to it. I mean, the guy that really starts sacred geometry is kind of a creep. But the meaning of it's good. But anyhow, go ahead.
Well, whenever I think, whenever I think sacred geometry, I think proofs.
Really be. Yeah. Not like sacred geometry is really supposed to be like a religion or anything.
No, it's supposed to be a way of living, like, just to remember we're all connected.
Secrets to life. It's mostly just like
we're all connected, yeah, to each other, right? It's kind of what the meaning of it is.
Yeah, it's just connecting cool symbols to like cool meanings that
the point of sacred geometry is to be a good person because we're all connected and everything you're dealing with, the person next to you is dealing with too. So treat them well. Don't yell at them when they are trying to take the wrong aisle because you're getting the hate energy from Walmart. So, I mean, and then I thought about, you know, why I love sacred geometry. I was like, man, I was being kind of an asshole. This damn slime under this Walmart is making me freak out.
This negative
juice. I hate
juice.
That store so much. It really would be my hell being stuck in there and not being able to get out. I don't know. It's just Walmart. It's probably the negative energy into birthing it. But so for comic news this week, you guys, one big news thing that was dropped because he didn't officially announce it, but he announced it. Sean Levy was getting interviewed for Free Guy, which I thought looked awful, but it's surprisingly one of the best reviewed films of the year. People are saying it's really good and the best video game movie, so I guess it's good. I'll have to check it out and see if I agree with the masses. But he was getting interviewed because there was a rumor going around that he's directing Deadpool 3 for Disney, and he said, I'm going to skirt that question, so that might be an answer for you, actually. So that clearly means he's directing Deadpool 3, which sounds Disney-like. He's not my favorite director. His filmography, which I want to go over with you guys, is absolutely insane.
Oh, yeah. Disney has Deadpool now, huh?
Yeah, Marvel has Deadpool.
Yeah. They said it's going to be rated R, though. That's what Feige said a while back. Good. He was like, listen, we know you guys are afraid of it. We'll say it right now. Don't be.
I think it'll be Lucky's first R-rated movie, too.
I don't think there's any turning back with Deadpool at this point. If they're going to make a Deadpool 3, it would be really weird for them to try and market it towards kids, because then the kids would go and watch Deadpool 1 and 2.
I think there's a lot more kids out there that have watched Deadpool 1 and 2 already.
No, it's true, for sure.
And not even like the... I saw it on FX where they edited 40% of the swears.
Yeah, kids love Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah. Even when I went to go see Deadpool 2 at the theater, there were like kids in the theater. Mostly not. It was mostly adults. It was fun. Me and my friends went and got like to one of those ones with the bars and got like pictures of beer.
I did the same thing here with my friends Austin and Sarah. It was a fun time.
I wish we could do that again for Deadpool 3, but sadly, I don't think the world will be put back together.
I think it will. They're not even filming it yet. We have time. We'll say it right now, Jack. Hopefully. You should be moved here by then.
I figured they were already doing it under
wraps. We're announcing ahead of time, fans. We're going to be in Vegas, me, Chaz, and Jack, at a venue with a bar watching Deadpool 3. Come and watch it with us and see if Sean Levy's first R-rated movie will be good. So I'm going to go through his filmography real quick. Maybe he has another R-rated movie and I'm wrong. Okay, so his first movie is called Just in Time, which looks bonkers. I sent you guys a photo, and it looks like it was made straight-to-video movie in our text chat. And then it's Big Fat Liar.
Yeah.
Just Married. Big Fat Liar is pretty good. Married, which I will also say is pretty good. I thought it was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Yeah. The Pink Panther with Steve Martin.
Okay.
I'll take Steve Martin where I can.
Night at the Museum.
I want Steve Martin in Deadpool.
Night at the Museum 2. Battle of the Smithsonian. Date Night. Real Steel, which I know has Defenders.
Oh,
I've never seen it.
Okay.
I've never seen Date Night either. So, The Internship.
Steve Carell and Tina Fey, right?
Yeah, The Internship, which I've never seen. I only know about it because when I lived in Palo Alto, they were filming it, and they were filming it a bunch at the coffee shop right next to my work, where I also worked at a coffee shop, but it was the competition where I think they own I can't remember the coffee shop's name, but like Pete's Main Competition, I think they own a coffee shop at the end of that movie. And then This Is Where I Leave You, which I've never seen, but I know it's like a family drama. Ninth Museum, Secret of the Tomb, mm-hmm. Free Guy, and then The Adam Project, which is another Ryan Reynolds movie where it's like going 13 going on 30 or something. He gets like either transported with a kid or he's a kid that gets turned into an adult. Some one of those movies.
Both sound kind of cool.
Wait, what was the last one?
Oh, he travels back in time to help his younger self.
That sounds better than 13 going on 30. He just seems like
maybe
he's...
Hopefully he like gave them a script and they liked it. Because it would be really weird for them to just pick him and be like...
I'm pretty sure he's doing the script with Ryan Reynolds.
And Night at the Museum. Let's pick him.
No, I was going to say, I think actually, like, he didn't write a lot of those movies that he directed.
No, he didn't.
He's pretty much like just a director. So like in my mind, I'm thinking maybe that's better. They'll have like two other funny guys write a good Deadpool movie, and then he'll just come in and like just make it like good. Like I won't say more than serviceable, not great.
He's directed
not like
most
going
of Stranger
to
Things too,
it,
which
but,
I
like,
do like. Which is another thing he's done.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Night of the Museum movies are pretty funny. Well, at least one and two. I never saw three or two.
I said the first one. First one was good.
Like, they look good. Like, they're shot well. Everybody's performance is as good as they're supposed to be, I think. Like, nobody stands out as like, wow, they fucking crushed it in that role. I never thought they'd be so goddamn funny.
Yeah.
Or, like, anything like that. It's just...
Ryan Reynolds seems like to partner with directors, and it looks like this is the new guy Ryan Reynolds has partnered with, because his next three films will be all with him. So, they must have... Because I know Ryan Reynolds is very hands-on, so I think maybe a lot of it is that he kind of lets Ryan Reynolds do his thing. And that's probably why he's getting hired to do Deadpool, is that he kind of lets Ryan Reynolds do whatever he wants without too much feedback or fighting. So
I kind of wonder too how much money they get from Netflix, like how much money Ryan Reynolds gets for Netflix movies.
I'm curious about that. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because like they buy completed movies and then just stream them. You know what I mean? Like that. I guess they made that Six Underground or whatever.
That Six Underground, which they announced this week, didn't do well, and they're not going to do a sequel.
Was it that one?
I've never seen it. The poster I've seen.
We're never going to get Seven Underground?
The poster was great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if it's like one of those, like, if that one, did they make that just for?
The Adam Project?
Either way.
I feel like they made
that. Maybe they get
now
more
they're putting
money.
On Netflix, I feel. Like, yeah, because they pay them up front, and they don't have to worry about any of that stuff we were talking about last week, which that's got more interesting now, because now Disney's claiming that in her contract she was always supposed to get revenue from streaming because it's a part of the box office, which would make the lawsuit completely different. Either way, I kind of have heard that Disney knew this was going to happen, but they kind of just weighed their options and were like, we'll be okay, which I think is kind of what happened.
Yeah.
Like from what I heard, they knew this was going to happen. Other real quick comic stuff that's news related. The Suicide Squad came out this week. Chaz, did you watch it yet? Can we talk about it or no?
I did.
I liked it. It's pretty badass.
Pretty badass.
The first hour, because I was tired from work, so I watched like the first hour first, and I was like, I'm not vibing with it yet. I really liked it, but it wasn't like other James Gunn movies, because James Gunn's one of my favorite like living filmmakers. I really love kind of how he handles characters. But that second hour just brought everything together for me. That fucking ending and everything was great. He just handles damaged characters so well.
Yeah.
I have not seen that yet.
I really saw the ending.
It's good.
Oh, man. I really saw it going one of two ways, but I'm glad that happened.
And people actually die this time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on HBO Max, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll watch that when we get off then, probably sometime tonight.
Yeah, the body count is pretty incredible. It's exactly what it needed to be for a movie called The Suicide Squad. Like that's the problem mainly with the last one, and then everything else also.
At the end, everyone commits
that
suicide.
Last one. That would even be better than whatever
it's
David
supposed to be like
Ayer
the Dirty Dozen, though. And in the first one, all they did was kill the random people that no one knew anyway, and they killed like three people.
There were a lot mm-hmm. of terrible things about the first movie, but I thought it was actually pretty enjoyable.
Oh, Jack, you're gonna love this one then, because it's a million times Dang. Better.
Yeah, you're gonna really like this one.
Actually,
yeah.
I mean, the promise is used. Like, people are gonna die. I mean, many people die before we get the credits, which is also another great opening sequence by James Gunn. And I got to watch it with my wife, which I was like, I'm going to have to watch it at 6 a.m. with the baby, but she likes Harley Quinn. So I was like, I want to watch this. She's like, I'll watch that. And I was like, yes, we get to watch it together. Thankfully, Harley Quinn appeals to many women, which is good. And she was really good in this one, too. I feel like James Gunn really, her whole, without really giving away, the whole cartoon sequence with her fighting was great. And
I was like horribly sick while watching Birds of Prey. And so I don't even know if it was good or not.
It was not as good as this Suicide Squad, but better than the last Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just got kind of thrown off by
Harley Quinn was obviously like the best thing about
the beginning with like a young daughter. I just had the baby and we watched it and I was like, yeah, I don't know about watching Ewan McGregor kill this teenage girl and her parents. Like, and that kind of threw me off the rest of the movie. I was like, I don't know if I really want to watch this. I mean...
Yeah, that's a rough
that's
one.
Probably just because I just became a father. I'm sure if I had not had a baby yet and everything, I would have probably been like, oh, well, merciless violence, it's fine. Let's keep watching it. But anyway, you guys want to bring anything else up or should we get into this?
I was going to say I want to talk some mindless violence. I want to talk some karate violence. I want to talk about Iron Fist kicking the shit out of Legion of Hydra guys. And probably what is one of the coolest... fucking Iron Fist this runs they've ever done.
Maybe my favorite. I won't lie. Yeah. I haven't read much Iron Fist. This is probably... I'm not going to lie. This is the only Iron Fist I've ever read that did not have Luke Cage also in it. If it wasn't a Heroes for Hire or the Luke Cage Iron Fist.
It's pretty close for me, too. I think I maybe read two others. Tops. So, that's... Yeah. Maybe not saying much, but...
And
this
the battles
is
are fucking awesome. There's lightning flying and fucking... People beating the shit out of each other.
David Aja making everything just look like crazy
David
good.
Aja,
you know what I mean?
Aja, however you say his name. I think it's Aja, right? David Aja? I'm going to get...
Either way, his style is so clean and has like a Steranko-ness to him. That's what I caught this time reading it. Was like it reminded me a little bit of like that Steranko, like Nick Fury... Just that real clean, like when he like rocks somebody, like gives him like the straight like chuck or whatever. There's no motion lines. It's just we know that dude just got the shit punched out of him, kind of vibe. You know what I mean? And then all of the like the wildness of the like patterns whenever the like chi gets rearranged or whatever. Like the scenes where it's like almost like a computer screen doing like mind control on you. You know what I mean? There's all that swirls and spirals and stuff. That's super
it's,
Steranko, man.
That,
so, yeah.
It's rad, and it definitely... I'm going to get into the creative team real quick before I get into, like... One thing I will still say quick is I really like how they use what I'll call the Lost storytelling or now Nice House in the Lake storytelling. There's a modern-day story, and then flashbacks throughout when Brubaker and Fraction are writing it. The last two Fraction issues are kind of one-offs that are just telling also about past Iron Fist that are very good, but it's... Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker, David Aja, Travel Foreman, Kano, Kari Evans, Tonchi Zonjic, Clayman. Those are just the pencilers I was able to get onto my phone because unfortunately on Marvel Unlimited, they get rid of the title sequence in most of this run. So you just see their last name. So jeez. I was kind of just going off of what I could get. And then Matt Hollingsworth on most of the colors. Roy Allen Martinez, another artist. Leandro Fernandez, another artist. June Chung, who's now an artist of her own right, was a colorist on a lot of it. Francisco Paronzini. Leo Fernandez, who's not Leandro Fernandez, another Fernandez. Victor Olazava, Dan Brown, Art Monkeys, and Dave Lampier were most of the letters in the book, which that's a hell of a team, and that's because all the shifting time periods of this book. Because we get Danny Rand in current time, kind of starts out just in the middle of Danny Rand's life. He's kind of feels he's, you know, he has this Chinese businessman trying to buy some trains from him, and he feels kind of like it's shady, which it definitely is. He's smelling the Hydra right away. And then we have Orson Randall, who immediately we're going to think is related to Danny Rand, which I guess he kind of is, but not also. who's an older Iron Fist that kind of kicks it off, because we start the book off actually with an Iron Fist in medieval China, and then we go to Orson Randall, and then we get to Danny Rand. So right off the bat, we're finding out it's called Immortal Iron Fist because Iron Fist itself, not the person, never dies, and it's passed on and shared between many different Iron Fists. And we're kind of thrown into this journey, which leads to a fucking literal kung fu tournament like Enter the Dragon, which is fucking awesome. I do wish there was a little bit more in the actual tournament, because then like other plot machinations kind of start going on, and I kind of wish there was more battles, because the ones
like immediately,
yeah. But the one that it does happen immediately, I really wish Danny was in more fights. But the one we get, and I can't wait, I'll wait to hear you guys like main grasp of the story besides what Chaz already said, because I can't wait to name off the combatants' names, because they fucking have made some awesome names for these characters.
Right.
Some great names.
No, that's kind of how I felt about like and like a lot of the lore and like some of the older stories, is a lot of it felt like they'd set something up and then just completely move away from it immediately, which kind of bugged me. But a lot of it was really cool regardless, so I didn't mind it. But I was kind of just like, huh, I wish more of this stuff like mattered to the story that they spent so much time building up.
Yeah. I could see where you're coming from with it. Like, with that, because there is some stuff that definitely doesn't feel, it doesn't really lead anywhere, or it doesn't feel like it leads anywhere at times. But I almost feel like those ones that don't matter necessarily just reinforce the, like, the Kung Fu movie legacy-ness of it.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, there's so much of those movies and those stories that are, like, sensei to master, passing down this technique, this generational thing. So the idea of like Iron Fist existing over all these centuries, all these like millennia, that it's always sort of been a protector or a fighter for this land, was pretty radical. And then when the ones that do matter come in, it's super sick. Like when you get to see one of them using their chi and the Iron Fist itself in so many different ways that later they interpret in new ways, the modern era, which is always that Karate Kid moment of like, I mastered that technique and then I gave it my own little flourish.
I guess I just, I wish I just knew better which parts were like their own encapsulated little stories, and which, what was part of the overarching story. Cause the beginning felt a little confusing with like,
those are my favorite flashbacks. All these different
stories,
Jack,
are going to connect somehow.
I gotta say, for me,
it was good. Yeah. I was just saying, I was a little confused.
It's where we get
Orson Randall flashbacks, like Orson Randall's flashbacks, where he's like addicted to opium and being a bastard and like beating up his biographer the first time he meets him, but then the next time
let's take a pause real fast. You can't just say smoking opium and being a bastard without revealing.
He went
like,
to World War One.
He went out into the world and fought in World War One and watched everybody die around
Need
him.
Context.
Stood in like blood and trenches. Now
he's smoking
PTSD.
Opium because he has PTSD, and I enjoy
like, how did you manage to survive? He's like, no one really survives, like implying that everyone leaves dead inside.
Dead too.
Yeah, there's that great scene too where when he's using his gung fu where he's calling the names of everyone and he's forgot some of them, where he's like trying to name everyone that died in World War One. And then
that kid from Iowa.
Yeah. What was his name? I can't remember anymore. Yeah, and I really enjoyed the Wu Ao Shi story, the one about the pirate queen. That was Iron Fist. I really like that as like a short one-off love story. And Orson Randall's a cool character. I don't mean it's just like he's some opium junkie. He's definitely scarred from war. But he has that like cool grandpa vibe, or, you know, older man vibe, where it's cool that he's a bastard. I mean, yeah, he was probably being a little violent back then, but he also became best friends with the guy he mercilessly beat up the first time he met him. And then the next time we flash, and they're just best friends, and he's telling him the story. And I love that Fraction and Brubaker don't even have to explain how that happened. They're like, they met, didn't go well, and next time we check in with them, they're best friends, and he's just telling him the story. So, I mean, little...
You know better than when I'm drunk. They correct me when I'm drunk. or whatever yeah. scene. Yeah.
I enjoyed all that. I enjoyed most of the flashbacks. The only thing that I think didn't really fall through with me is I really thought with all the Wendell Rand stuff we were getting as he was going to be revealed to be one of the combatants in, I don't know if you guys thought that, but especially when I was first reading this, when it came out, which,
I did suspect he was going to show up at a critical moment, and what better place than the tournament to throw yeah. down with his son. But I'm kind of glad that it didn't go that way.
Yeah, that his death matters.
I mean? That would I think it would have undercut yeah, it a little
matters.
Bit.
Yeah,
because like, yeah. yeah, and all the flashbacks we got of him before, it was more like, look at how like selfish yeah. he is. You know what I mean? Look at how greedy he is.
And it was really for like Davos's yeah. character development, really to kind of see Davos from Wendell's point of view, to kind of understand Davos, who is the Steel Serpent that becomes a Steel Phoenix. He's it's weird in the not very good Netflix Iron Fist, instead of making Davos Wendell's best friend, they make him Danny's best friend, and they like young him up, and he's like fighting over the Iron Fist title. I only know this because I've watched Defenders. I've never actually, and I watched 3 episodes of Iron Fist season 2 because I was like, oh, maybe this one will be better because people seem to be a little bit warmer on it, and he's gonna wear the mask at some point, which then I found out was only in like one scene where they're training at Kunlun.
Yeah,
whack.
Yeah, I didn't.
That guy got like canceled from just being a bad actor.
This was the book that
I feel bad.
This was the book that like really made me get excited for them announcing that they're gonna do an Immortal Iron Fist show, and then so disappointed because it's nothing like this book.
Why not just put him in the damn mask? If, like, I get that they think it's ridiculous, and it is. But that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like
he's kind of supposed to be. He's like a dude that does kung fu in green spandex.
Like Davos, come on, guys. For being a bad guy though,
Davos kinda rules definitely rules. Yeah,
like Davos is pretty fucking hardcore. He beats the shit out of all of his own Hydra men, and none of them can touch him. And he's like, I'm just bored. They think I'm doing this to see if I'm good. I'm just. But I have nothing better to do until we can go fuck up Iron Fist. Like, it's rad. I agree that he's used Wendell's story as pretty much just to give us Davos's story. And it has a real, like, Jonah Hex feel of, like, you're the outsider. I don't like this. I'm going to go fucking get this, like. So, yeah, I don't know. It's, he's just kind of, there's a little bit of, like, tragicness to his character. You know?
Definitely, he felt like he was entitled to Iron Fist, and then like he got it, he lost to a foreigner, and then he went to go fight the dragon, and the dragon was gonna whip his ass.
Then he dies, gets resurrected as a different immortal weapon, and now has to serve a whole nother city and stuff. Like, I don't know. His design is pretty cool, like the thinness of the serpent on his chest, and
I love the purple.
I think David just makes everybody look cool in this book. Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah. The fact that his design was like him being like a big beefcake with like the baggy pants and everything. And then, you know, Iron Fist is like super skinny wearing what looks like spandex.
Right?
Yeah. When you see those silhouettes jumping at each other, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it's time, too, to talk about the names of some of these characters. Because not only do we have the Iron Fist, who's pretty badass, and Davos, the Steel Serpent, which is equally badass, but we get some pretty cool dudes.
I have
them
all written down. I don't know if you want to read them or you want me to read all these names off.
They felt like characters from a fighting game.
I want to throw out.
Do it. If you have them written down, too, we go back and forth.
Oh, big time. I was going to say the Crane Mother. That lady
was
gnarly.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Super gnarly.
She leads one of the other heavenly cities, and her weapon was killed by Iron Fist in an accident before the tournament, and she could only have one once every
years.
Like 400 years, 300 years. Yeah. So like, she had just this real gnarly looking design, and then this legion of crane wives
that are just to get killed like, and absorbed for power. Yeah.
But they could also like do a bunch of stuff. They pulled ropes and cut his head off. Like, holy smokes! But she's pretty she's pretty badass. I also liked
Dog Brother Number One. Which I was gonna bring up.
Oh, Dog Brother Number One. That's right, leader of the pack. Yeah.
And then we get Fat Cobra, which is another great name.
He's the Bobby B. Bobby Baratheon of the group for me. That's Fat Cobra.
Fat Cobra rules. His fight with Iron Fist is probably my favorite fight in the book. There's just lightning getting thrown fucking everywhere. They're throwing each other through buildings and fucking just wrecking shop.
He looks like a sumo fighter, and he is fast as fuck and strong as hell. Like, it's so sick.
He looks like Yokozuna on roids that also is probably on Adderall. Like, he's just going quick. He's built.
Yeah. Got, like, E-Honda-ness to him almost.
Yeah.
There's, like, no way he should be going anywhere near as fast as he is. No.
But that's the power of martial arts, isn't it? they can surpass their limits. We have
the Bride of Nine Spiders, which is, like...
Which sounds like a movie.
It's like
all
a very pale girl. Like. And we have Tiger's beautiful daughter, which her outfit I wanted to joke with my wife that I should get for her, which was just leather straps and very, very revealing. Very much like, I'm going to distract you with this outfit. And then
it's Tiger's beautiful daughter.
Don't forget Tiger Bertha.
Right.
I think that's all the combatants.
No, Prince we forgot about the goat.
That's who I thought Wendell Rand was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when I first read it.
That's kind of...
That was going to be Wendell Rand.
Hooded, Caucasian-y looking man.
I also loved when him and Davos were betting on Fat Cobra and Iron Fist's first fight.
Oh, yeah. That fight just... Romper Stomper. And then we, of course, we have Lei Kong the Thunderer, who's a badass in his own right, Davos' dad. And fucking Danny's teacher, who's just like a big buff guy with heart of gold.
Orson's teacher too.
Yeah, he's just an immortal that looks constantly good, like Paul Rudd. Just still looking young after all these years. And then we get UT, the August, who's actually a guy named Nuan, because he's not the original UT. And then we get a female servant who's pretty badass that does not have a name, which is kind of a huge focal point of the series of her choosing a name. We have Zhao, who's kind of the antagonist of the book. That starts out kind of as a secondary antagonist and then becomes the main antagonist. And then we have Danny's normal friends, Misty Knight, his on-and-off girlfriend, Colleen Wing, and Luke Cage. And, yeah, that's about all the characters I've written down. We also get, you know, the Wu Aoshi and the fisherman from that one-off story. But it's a very great cast of a lot of characters, and it really catches that kung fu spirit and also the noir spirit. I feel like Brubaker's writing with Fraction really comes through in the first arc with Orson's flashbacks where they're in the city. One thing I really loved about this is they explain how Danny gets around. Like, I even took a picture of the part in the book, but where Danny explains he bought most of the rooftops in New York City so that he can travel on the rooftops back to his corporation and change because he doesn't have superpowers, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
Great thing to explain.
Yeah. I also feel like it sort of absolves him of a... It does sound weird that a rich white guy owns a lot of land in New York City. Like, would be a little bit rough. So when he's like, no, I bought the rooftops and some of these other buildings and like I use them for other charity stuff too, but like I need to be able to get places.
Definitely. Like I got to get around. I can't fly. You know, I'm just some random dude with mystical powers and my main power like Batman besides Kung Fu is money. So I'm going to buy a bunch of fucking buildings.
Yeah. I think that's definitely part of him being like naive and rich. Like he explains is that like, you know, if he had all the Iron Fist powers like his predecessors or reading this book, he probably wouldn't need to buy the buildings to, you know, move around. But he's just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna buy all the buildings.
Yeah.
And
well, he did get a free pneumatic tube station, but that kind of got...
Yeah, all the steampunk stuff in here is cool, too. Orson Randall's his grandfather or his dad.
It's super like, pulp hero-y. It's, like, way, way Doc Savage.
Where they built a fucking huge balloon and accidentally crashed into Kunlun or Kunlun. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
We should say the tournament, too, is that Kunlun's a heavenly city, and there's actually 7 heavenly cities, we think, but technically, I guess there's 8, which we won't really get into because that's in Straczynski's run, not Matt's
run.
But there's 7 heavenly cities, and then they align for a tournament called the Heart of Heaven, and that's where Danny travels to after he kind of learns a lot more about the Iron Fist kind of mythology from Orson Randall, and they have a good Hydra fight in a pneumatic tube station, and then they have a great fight in a building. One of my other favorite scenes is when Danny and Davos kick each other and the building explodes, and he's miraculously fine. He thinks it's going to kill him, and he just blows it all to hell, and then he's just like chilling. They're like, oh, I guess I'm alive. He's just like, I'm going to kick with so much energy. This is most likely going to kill me. Kia! And then, like, you got to do those sound effects, too. It's a radical scene. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love the Highlander-style quickening of Orson's passing. You gotta get my chi the same way you got it from that dragon. And I'm just like, is he about to rip his heart out?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yep.
And then he does. And then he's all powered up. It's sick. That tournament, though, the idea of these heavenly cities only aligning every so often and then battling it out for supremacy with their independent immortal weapons is such a cool idea. Like, it's such a fucking kung fu movie I want to watch.
It's so cool, you know? Yeah. I really wish, one thing is I wish we could see the tournament to completion, but unfortunately Kunzi, the city that Crane Mother's from, did like the worst hiring job ever. They decided to hire some guy from Hydra, which, I mean, just, you should fucking never hire Hydra. And then you have Davos being his main representative of your city, and Davos kind of just picks on Zhao, who's the Hydra guy, the whole time. And then Zhao eventually is like, fuck all these cities. I'm going to fucking send a train into all of the cities and kill them all. Like, poor Jaren Hogarth, who was just trying to make a deal work, and then his mom ends up getting kidnapped and her finger cut off. And
yep. I almost feel a little bad.
Really?
Only because he's flexing exactly where he thinks he can to get what he wants. And the minute he even like baby flexes against Davos, Davos is like,
yeah,
what the fuck did you say?
Yeah.
Whose men are these? And then he's like, oh, not my men.
Even though technically they are Davos' men. Yeah.
His men. Yeah. So he knows like, oh, I'm not the fucking top dog, but they don't fucking know that. Jaren thinks I'm a fucking badass Hydra man, so I'm one of like, hey, I am a badass Hydra man. Look what I'm doing.
I got your mom.
Yeah, so it's like that bullying. You know when you like see a bully and you're like, fuck that bully, and then they're like, well, his home life is bad, and you're supposed to be like, oh man, he bullies because he's getting bullied or whatever. So I think that's my immediate like Pavlovian response to like, oh, he got
I'm pretty sure he comes
down
back
by the
too.
Boss. Now he goes to be mean.
I think.
Yeah, probably.
I have not read Straczynski's run, but I have a feeling that he comes back in that. Not 100% sure. The series got quickly canceled after Straczynski took over for the last 11 issues.
I wouldn't say it's his fault. Just like after a big tournament and a big explosion and a guy using his power to punch a train going like 100 miles per hour, like a magnetic levitation train, and your superhero fucking destroys it, like One Punch Man, like, where's your book going
to
go?
It's hard to follow Matt Fraction and Brubaker. Tough. Especially that's like their birth of their popularity is that those years. That's like when Matt...
Yeah. And I think even... Did Brubaker... He left partway through, right? Like, he ended up leaving...
I think he leaves issue 14.
A little bit.
And then 15 and 16
and like
were just
one
Fraction.
Or two more, right?
The last two, which are the one-shot issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good.
Which are really good. They're actually what I like to call, like, proto-Hawkeye issues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just enough Hawkeye-ness in them. Like, the... It'd be like archaeology. This would be the bones that Hawkeye was like, we can't.
Definitely. And with Aha's art, too, and this, like, I feel like a lot of this is probably why he got Hawkeye. And that book's a whole other story. I can't wait to get into that. That shit's so good. His run on that is fucking. His run on this is good. This is, I mean, I don't want to misquote it. The only other Iron Fist book I enjoy as much as this, it came out in 2016, and I don't remember the writer. I almost want to say it was Al Ewing, but I'm not sure. It was the Iron Fist.
I think it's Kerry Andrews.
It's the Iron Fist in Luke Cage book. I think it's one that not called Heroes for Hire. I might be wrong. It came out.
It came out
the same time as Jeff Lemire's Moon Knight. I only remember because I was getting both of them from a comic shop in San Francisco when I lived there, and it was real good. They had, like, it was really dark and comedic. Had like comedy drawing. I would have to look it up. It was popular with like fans of comics, but not enough people bought it. Kind of like West Coast Avengers, and then just fell off. I'm trying to look it up right now. But it's a good book.
I was gonna say this is the one. The Kerry Andrews run is called The Living Weapon, and he wrote and drew the whole thing, and the art in it is insane.
That sounds like something I definitely need to read. Power Man and Iron Fist is what it's called. Who the hell wrote this?
Oh, okay.
Hey, I really enjoyed that one as well. I'm trying to remember who wrote it. Are they going to tell me? Oh, David F. Walker. Duh. And Sanford Green, team that went on to do Bitterroot. That was their first project together. Yeah, that series is great. It's really funny, and it's got really good stuff in Harlem, and that's probably the other one I enjoyed as much as this. There's probably other great Iron Fist stories, but this was only one that I was like, I gotta get into. I mean, it's mostly because my love for Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker, but I don't know if they've used Iron Fist again like this, or I think they should really, you know. There's that series out right now, which I'm always saying I'm gonna read, a Marvel Unlimited by Larry Hama. Is it good?
That one I haven't read yet.
Yeah, that's how the covers look cool.
This one is on Marvel. Let me send the picture. One's on Marvel, I think everything's that's on the there. One.
I'll check it out.
Where is it? There it is. I sent it through the chat. I don't know if it's
going
to work.
Yeah, I'm going on it right now.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep, I got it. It's just called The Living Weapon, right?
Yeah.
But it's good getting into Fraction. We're starting off with this Marvel stuff because it shows how well he is as a writer, kind of mixing action with little bits of humor. And then we get to see him go buck wild in his later books, which will be a nice progression of seeing Fraction just go buck wild. And now I can't wait for Jack's reaction to Sex Criminals. I'm just going to have him know nothing about the book until he reads it.
No, that's perfect. That's the way I wish everybody could read it that way. You know what I mean? But I feel like anybody that's like a little bit like regular in the comics has already heard the premise at some point. You know what I mean? Because all the Eisners and shit at one, like there has to be. No, this is the best way to do it. Yeah. I wish I could forget it.
Blind.
Like, if I could neuralize myself MIB style, I would.
I got to get that third hard copy. I have all the third chunk of the books,
all the
like, on
big
digital.
Big hard sex criminals?
Yeah, I have the first two, and it's funny because they have the edited scenes, but we should save this for the episode we do on sex criminals.
That sounded interesting.
But yeah, this is a pretty good opening Fraction book, I think.
I feel bad because I want to talk more about this book, and there's a lot to talk about, but people should also read it without spoiling. It's funny that like some books it's easy that are shorter than this run for me to talk about for hours.
Yeah.
And then other books,
there's such a strong visual element to this book too, I think, that like even speaking about it just becomes redundant because everything looks so fucking cool in it, you know? Like,
yeah,
it's hard to describe the 17th kick that we saw that whooped ass when that dude like flew across a thing, or he fights a Hydra robot with like size on its arms. Like, you know, there's too much for people to see when they read this book that I don't think that we're doing it a disservice.
No, it's such an experience.
Visual.
It's such an experience. And what's good about these books, like in the next week of Invincible Iron Man, is our listeners can just read them on Marvel Unlimited, which is cool. It's a great app. It's $10.
You actually read these on Comixology Unlimited too.
Yeah, and it's on Comixology Unlimited. I think everything that's on Marvel Unlimited is also free on Comixology. Most things. Maybe not everything.
I could see you getting a bit more content because I think only the first two volumes are on Comixology for this.
Everything's on Marvel Unlimited, They've really restocked it where like literally everything is on there now except for stuff that's come out in the last 4 months or 3 months.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Like a 3 month gap.
Now that I think about it too, we're covering so many of Fraction's Marvel stuff that for me is the first time I started giving a shit about these characters stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So like it's interesting now looking at it, being like, man, Iron Man was like neat before, but I never like read an Iron Man run and felt like I was part of it. Like, I'd pick up an Iron Man book or two or three or four and always feel like I was missing a bigger part of everything, you know? And this one felt like not hand-holdy, but gates open, come on in, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's kind of neat. Like, when you said Invincible, I was like, damn, yeah, that's a good-ass run. And then I thought, hey, I didn't care about Iron Man before that. I didn't care about Iron Fist before this. He just looked cool.
I didn't
cool,
care about Iron Fist, you know, before this. And I remember when this was coming out in 2006, and, like, I was getting up flying colors. I remember this was the first time, like, this and Captain America. That was, like, a lot of my visual memories from at that comic book shop or reading Brubaker Fractions books when they were coming out. And it's Hawkeye even, too. Like, for me, Hawkeye, which I should wait for the episode. I definitely, another writer got me interested in Hawkeye, but I used to be the one, like, he's so good at that, because I used to be like, I love Hawkeye, and people look at me like, oh, it's crazy. But then he did his run, and other people liked Hawkeye finally, and I was like, see, he is cool. It's not just me being weird and thinking this purple dude in suits and shooting
it's
arrows
is
cool.
It's not me and eight other guys that like the arrow shooter, okay? He's actually radical enough for everyone.
And I mean the original design, not when he looked like Wolverine and Rob Liefeld's crazy-ass Avengers
run. Oh, hell yeah. You mean when he's practicing for Youngblood? Or
that,
taking
that
Youngblood
should be Patreon
to Marvel?
That should be Patreon materials when we cover Rob Liefeld.
God. Is it like punitive Patreon? Is that what it is?
I got to talk with my coworker who, Chaz, I text you. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he came up, like, after like 4 days at work, he came up and was like, what are you reading right now? Because he was just talking about UFC and like how he's into fighting. And I was like, oh, you read comics? He's like, oh, yeah. And he was like, I used to go to Maximum. I love Chaz and Anthony. And then I was like, I had a big, what's the guy's name they always talk to besides you? That I want to say Jeremy. He's like my main friend I talked to there. The guy doesn't work there anymore. I don't want to say guy because he's like someone I really Brian. Yeah. Brian, I think his name was Jeremy. I was trying to remember Brian's
name.
I don't
know. We had another Jeremy.
I was
getting at one point.
Jeremy. So. And I was like, it's not Jeremy, because he was asking me just like, he was asking me who still worked there because he was just naming off people. And I think he went there when Anthony was manager, at least from what I think he was telling. But I guess he still watches you on your streams on the website, which he was talking about.
Yeah, my Saturday live shows. Yeah. I tell people what they should order.
That's
well,
awesome.
I don't say what they should order. I say, this is really cool, and I would hate for you guys to miss it. So
I need to watch
chance.
Those more to get in. There's a lot of good comics right now to kind of segue into that. I mean, from what I've read this week, I've started Immortal Hulk 49 and thinks it's going to be really good, but I haven't been able to finish it. But
Immortal Hulk, Ewing's Immortal Hulk is like going to be one of them classic runs. This is the new, this is what feels like my lifetime's Peter David.
Definitely
Hulk. That could be like a season unto itself. Just like 10 issues a week or something. I hope. I do find it a little odd that DC went out of their way to collapse 5G, the idea, into let's do future state because nobody seems like they're going to like it, so we'll do it all over the course of like 2 months, get it out of the way, right? Try out a bunch of new talent, see if any of them can stick. And then we'll go right back into any story you want to tell in any era, all counts, all matters. But let's all actually just tell stuff from future state.
That's
let's,
true.
Let's all just continue that. And it's like, you did future state because you didn't want to fucking do future state. Like,
and then John Kent now too is also Superman, so I mean.
Yeah. And that's good. Enough.
Yeah. I want to read the Tom Taylor stuff. I haven't read that yet, but I'm excited.
It's good.
Okay.
For me, Tom Taylor right now I think is only good. I shouldn't say only good. I really like Tom Taylor on Seven Secrets.
Secrets, hell
and,
yeah. That book's
and
great.
Nightwing. Those are the two
Nightwing's great also.
The two places where I'm getting my Taylor fix. I know that he's other places doing other stuff. Superman is good, but I don't
I
love
feel like
it
I
yet.
Missed Nightwing last month. I know it's in my poll, but I feel like it's been a while since I maybe I have
No, nah, it's just been a minute since it came out. It's been like we got a like another printing, I think, on the week that we were supposed to get it.
Weird break?
Yeah, like there's an extra week because they had another print of a previous issue come out or something to the release. I don't know.
I forget that happens sometimes, especially Marvel used to all the time and DC. I mean, I mean, what's it called? Strange Adventures isn't taking fucking forever to come out. I mean,
now it's almost done now. Yeah.
It is. Tom King used to be someone for me that's like, oh, he's hot, hot. I love Tom King. And I liked his Batman run a lot, but now I am really warming to Tynion's run. And for me, The Nice House in the Lake, issue 3, was great. And I think it was more of what issue 2 could have been. Issue 3 definitely made it more mysterious to what's actually going on and definitely kind of... They definitely... I mean, I'm just going to call it now. They're on some kind of fucking spaceship, I'm guessing. I don't know, but it seems like they might be, which makes me... Spoilers for Nice House in the Lake. I have a feeling that maybe all that isn't true. Or is it?
I have a feeling it's going to be like a menagerie situation.
The Star Trek episode?
Yeah, where they're like on display.
Yeah.
So what they're showing them gets them all riled up, like when you shake an ant farm.
So you're like observing it like a biome.
Yeah, but not for study. For pleasure.
Yeah. For pleasure to see them freak out.
Like going to a zoo. When you go to a zoo and they're not feeding the lions and they're just sleeping, they're just big old cats. They look cool, but they're not like scary like on a nature documentary or if they were chasing me, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is to get them all like antsy.
Riled up.
Yeah.
Especially, so even though they have everything they literally need there, they're getting riled up because of what happened on the outside.
And
though
then,
some aren't.
He could show off. This is just how humans are. This is how they can be or whatever. But
especially because he was just observing them forever.
Yeah, we got a year. There are a lot of issues. So
I like the Lost technique, the Lost story time that you were going to get a character each issue, which I'm assuming because there's 10 of them, right? That 11 will be Walter's issue, and then 12 will be the wrap up. That's my guess. Is that
maybe?
Probably the zoo revelation would be happening in Walter's story. Because then we get to see things from his point of view.
I do kind of wonder, too. I mean, how many characters are going to be alive to tell their story?
Seems like everyone right now. Seems like they're all alive and everything looks really different.
But in the flash forwards, at the beginnings, and in the middle, like, in the present, when they're telling it, it feels like the sky's on fire.
Yeah, it looks like the sky's on
everybody's
fire.
Everybody's all fucked up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have a bunch of, like, shit going on with them. So, like, I don't know that even though it's 10 where we learn about everybody, that 10 are making it to tell their story, I think.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the fire in the sky is from, like, the aliens or them doing it to themselves, which would be a very Monsters on Maple Street kind of thing where they kind of tear each other apart and then kind of burn everything down. And I'm curious now what we learned about the end of the third issue, if that character is the only one there in that cube.
Right.
If there's other people and why they're being kept in the cube. Very Lost-like also, things happening. And I mean, I love that kind of writing. That's why Tynion sings to my heart in the Department of Truth. Yeah. I feel like he's probably around my age and grew up on all this shit, too. And was like, I'm going to take these stories I love and turn them into comics, which is great serialized storytelling. And then X-Men 2, for me, was a very good follow-up. I'm really enjoying Dugan's run. It was fun. It looked fucking great. Pepe the Ross. What's with all the very, like, incredible fucking artists that are out today are all from South America or Mexico? Which I've noticed. I don't know if it's an art school down there, which I was talking about this with my wife today. I'm very curious if it's like an art school they all go to, or they just are really into comics in Mexico and South America. But I mean, like, fucking Pepe Larraz, fucking Alvaro Martinez Bueno, fucking Jorge Jimenez, Jorge Fornes, like R.B. Silva.
Carmen Carnero.
Marcos Martin. Yeah, Carmen Carnero.
You said Silva already. Yeah, no, there's quite a bit.
Yeah, they kind of are like all crushing it. And then, I mean, I enjoy pretty much everything this week. I'm really enjoying Out of Body by Peter Milligan. I love me Peter Milligan. Whenever I definitely know Peter Milligan's taking acid now. I thought so before. Now confirmed.
Now we know.
Confirmed. Now confirmed. Milligan has done the dose.
We got you.
Real quick, it was nice. I posted on Twitter that John Lee shouted out Pink Buzz. Our brother's over there doing a show because they were talking about John Lee's work on Hotel. That's really cool. And now I think we're going to do something with them around the holidays. We got a lot of cool stuff coming up. We got I think we'll save some announcements. So we have a lot of cool creators coming on or coming back to talk about their future books. There's a book I'm real excited for in October that features one creator we've had on and another we're going to have on, which is going to be a time for me to gush because the person we're having on is probably my favorite living writer. On his main books, I'm really excited for his new book coming out because I feel like it's just the kind of landscape of DC characters that you could have fun with. And I kind of really love what Rahm's been doing with the order and kind of his characters. Or it's like, it's time without, you know, revealing. Like, I feel like, yeah, whatever. Azrael, I feel like, is, it'd be cool in the right hands. And I feel like Dan Waters is the right hands for Azrael.
Fingers crossed.
It looks, and Danny drawing it, that just sounds like it's going to be a fucking visual treat as well.
Yeah.
I can't wait. A lot of good books coming out and more announcements. We're still on Saga Watch, which I thought Brian's post to retailers would have confirmed the rumor I heard. I mean, that's coming out in November, so maybe they pushed it back a month or two. Also, last week, there was a bunch of bullshit because some person went on Reddit and they thought it was Fiona Staples because her name was Fiona on Reddit. I don't know if you guys heard the story.
Yeah.
She was like, Saga's coming back real soon. I love drawing these characters. And people started like sharing this fucking Reddit stream. And then Brian Kayvon had to come on his Reddit profile and be like, that's not Fiona. If we announce this, it's going to be through a reputable news source, not on Reddit. So they're still holding off. It's clearly coming soon. I feel like December is still a good bet because how long do you think people need to read that box set? A month? 2 months?
I'm just glad they're doing it because it's been so long, I don't know that I remember everything.
I read it, reread it quite a lot. They need to come back. Me and my coworker, he loves that series we're talking about. I mean, they have a lot of reasons with COVID and family issues, which I understand. Brian has kids too, so probably being safer in COVID, I can understand it was stressful for me. So I'm sure a lot of reasons, but it's been 3 years. Come on, guys. I want to talk about that book. And I want to have one of my best friends growing up, Matt Brown, to come on and talk about Saga because it's like his favorite book ever. And I love Saga too, but I don't know how much longer I can wait before being like, I got to just not worry about this all the time.
I got to put it out of my mind. Just be happy when it comes.
I wonder if they'll keep their price. I remember that they kept it at $3 always and never raised it to $4 when all the other comics raised to $4. I think they'll probably have to raise to $4 by now.
No.
You think they'll keep the $3?
Yeah, because they'll go by volume. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's how they make their money.
Yeah, they just sell more because it's so good. They don't need to worry about trying to make it up by getting the extra dollar out of everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And real quick before we're real excited to talk about Iron Man next week because I did read New Universal, which me and Chaz were talking about, which I very much enjoyed. But Salvador LaRocca it's real good. But his crazy trace drawing was definitely evident. Where it's like, it's Josh Holloway from Lost, it's Johnny Depp, Bruce Willis, Nicole Kidman. But it's weird because the characters don't always look like Johnny Depp or Josh Holloway or Bruce Willis. It's only sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they look like regular drawings, but then on close-ups, they look exactly like actors.
I always think it's like he drew the close-up first to get like a feel for it, and then he was going by memory for all the other stuff, and then every now and again forgot. So he's like, I got to trace again.
Yeah, shit. I made it look like Johnny Depp from the Ninth Gate.
Yeah.
Got to go back.
Back it up.
And then James Cromwell, too, makes an appearance. And then Angelina Jolie as well. Redhead Angelina Jolie. I mean, it's still a great story. I mean, it's crazy they didn't do too much with that. That's not the same Starfire from Avengers, right?
No. It's the same idea of the Starbrand. Hickman, repurposed the Ellis idea of the new Universal, like, white event and the bleed and all that.
Yeah.
Avengers, yeah. So, like... Yeah. The Night Mask idea and Starbrand were both.
Ellis ideas that Hickman repurposed. He loves repurposing ideas. He always says he takes Brian Michael Bendis' ideas and he gets them the most.
And makes them good.
Yeah. Still have to finish Powers. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in as always. We're going to be talking about Invincible Iron Man next week, which I'm excited to read for my first time. And then we're going to continue Fraction, and then we're going to have a bunch of awesome guest spots, some we can't talk about yet and some we can. And then we'll definitely be doing some Pink Buzz as well sometimes soon, so keep out for that. And always remember to rate, review, and subscribe. As always, I am Michael, also known as Poet Air.
I am Jack, a.k.a. Synesthetic.
And I am Chaz. You can find me on Twitter at Chaz Simons, and you can find the show at Outside The with a zero in the front.
And try to stay away from those negative rivers of slime. Let me know real quick if any of you have dug under a Walmart and took in some of the slime and then played good music to it to make it react. Tweet at me on Twitter. And then, yeah, Chaz, there you go. Cleanse your cheese bag.
Cleanse your chi, turn the page, and wash your hands.
Pages.
What the fuck did you say?
Yeah.